Audio Drama Production Podcast, Episode 37. What is a reviewer looking for in your work?
The Audio Drama Production Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Audio Drama Production Podcast, where we're looking to help you make great audio drama. As always, go to our website if you want to see more about what we're talking about here. And the website is at audiodramaproduction.com. And you can even see us on Facebook if you like. You'll see us in the group known as Audio Drama Production. So, Matthew, my name's Robert, by the way. You probably knew that already, though, didn't you? I think we've met somewhere along the line.
I didn't know that.
No? Okay, well, my name's Robert and your name is... What was it?
My name's Matthew and I am here too with you. And the listener, the three of us are here, gathered. We might be in someone's car, we might be in their phone, or where else could we be? Their tape player.
I'm in a YT-1300 Carillion Cruiser.
Good.
Yeah. So what's going on this week? I believe there's an interview with a legend in the industry.
Yeah, a big name in the old audio drama world, Lawrence Raw. He'll be no stranger to anyone listening, I would imagine. The man behind Radio Drama Reviews, the very, very popular reviews-based website. I thought we could get Lawrence on. I've been conscious that we've been going down the sort of gear and technology route a bit too much recently. We're not big gearheads ourselves, and it's always nice just to strip things back a bit and just talk about, you know, the wider aspects of audio drama, why we're all doing it, what we're all trying to achieve, and what those who maybe look upon our work with a critical eye are looking for as well. I think that's something that we can benefit from, and certainly the listener as well. So that was one of the big reasons for getting Lawrence on, and he was a great guy to chat to. The audio quality isn't brilliant on this particular... I don't know if it was just a disagreement between the Scottish internet and the Turkish internet, because Lawrence is an Englishman in Turkey, which is, I think that was a Sting song.
Yeah, it was a B-side.
But yeah, don't let that distract for the great quality content that Lawrence brings, and I'm sure you'll take a lot from it.
Yeah, it's funny, we came across Lawrence's name when we first started out in Aftermath, didn't we? We got episode 1 or 2 out, or 3 maybe, and we realised that he was doing a lot of reviews of stuff that's out there. And, you know, it's useful to speak to him because you hear a lot of writing advice in general, whether it's books or anything else, saying if you really want to know how to write, you need to read as much as possible. You need to check out other people's work across the entire spectrum. And who does that more than Lawrence? He listens to all kinds of stuff, doesn't he?
Well, without further ado, will we allow Lawrence to take centre stage?
Absolutely.
My name is Lawrence Raw. I am by trade a professor of English at Bashkent University in Ankara. My day job is training student teachers of English. My on-day job is writing stuff. I write a lot on film adaptations, cinema adaptations and other adaptations. But my passion is reviewing radio drama. I started the site radiodramareviews.com in 2009. And ever since then, I've reviewed radio drama on and off. And I just finished another review today, and it's now something like 1,600 different radio drama reviews. Not only BBC radio drama reviews, but also reviews of independent radio drama. And the reason why I do it is for two reasons. One, not many other people do it. And two, if you read any radio drama reviews in British or American newspapers, they normally tend to be incredibly superficial without looking at radio as a specific medium in which directors work. So I aim in my radio dramas reviews to show how directors have used the oral medium to communicate that particular point of view.
Lawrence, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on at last.
Thank you. That's very nice to be here.
So, Lawrence, a few things to chat about today. From the point of view of an audio drama or radio drama producer, what is a reviewer like yourself looking for in an audio drama? What sort of things are you analysing and picking out and sort of judging it on?
Well, I mean, I think one of the things is that having done so many radio reviews, I think I have an ear for audio drama. And what I'm interested in the most is the soundscape, the relationship of the actors' voices to the sounds that you hear in the background or in the foreground, and particularly focusing on the actor's position vis-a-vis the microphone and the sound balance of the ways in which directors actually balance the sound in between the actors' voices and the sound effects. I think the reason for that is that radio drama, unlike any drama that has a visual aspect to it, really appeals to the imagination, conjuring up mental pictures in the listener's mind. And that I find extremely liberating, I think, to listeners. And it's my job as a reviewer to try and communicate to my readers how that imaginative picture has been conjured up in my mind.
We've seen an upswing in audio drama production and podcasting in recent years. Is this something you've noticed that's happened quite drastically? Have you seen a lot of new producers and production houses that you hadn't necessarily heard of before?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I have to admit that I'm absolutely snowed under with requests for reviewing radio drama. And I mean, if I had wanted to take it up as a full-time profession, if someone was stupid enough to pay me, I would more than happily do it. But absolutely, I mean, I do think the nice thing about radio drama now, audio drama, is that there is no distinction between the so-called amateurs and professionals, both in terms of the quality of product produced and in terms of the ways in which those involved in producing radio drama use the technical resources at their disposal.
How do you sort of cope with the integrity side of things? Like if someone really, really wants you to review the radio drama and say for some reason or another you thought it was terrible, how do you diplomatically negotiate your way around that situation?
I think this actually comes as a result of age. When I started reviewing, which was like 25 years ago, I used to actually write rude things down in my radio drama reviews. And like a lot of critics in the theatre and in movies, perhaps I was more interested in my own rhetorical performance rather than actually reviewing a production on its own terms. These days, I tend to be much fairer because I realise the amount of effort that people have put into that radio drama. And although perhaps the writing may not be very good, or that there may be deficiencies in terms of sound quality or sound balance, that still doesn't detract from the fact that producers have put in a lot of effort into producing that podcast, and therefore they should be rewarded for their efforts.
What, in your opinion, are the sort of central components of a good audio drama? If you were to pick out, you know, you've mentioned the soundscape, but some sort of other factors that could really make or break a story?
I think the favourite one is, does it hold my attention? And I often go by the 5-minute rule. Rather like if you are opening a book, if my attention is grabbed in the first 5 minutes of an audio drama, then I'll want to continue listening to it. And that means not necessarily establishing the story, but finding some kind of hook, if you like, to grab the listener's attention so that they want to continue listening. And I think once that hook has been established, then the listeners themselves can be drawn into the story, which then goes into my second point about an audio drama. And I think more so than visual drama, audio drama has to draw the listeners into the story by creating questions in the listener's mind. This may not necessarily just be plot, but it can also be by using sounds that may seem unnatural or different, forcing the listener to consider the relationships of the sound to the story and making their own conclusions for themselves. I mean, obviously, like any other drama, a good audio drama must have plausible characterization. But I do think that writers in audio drama don't necessarily have to place so much emphasis on characterization as, say, they might have to in visual drama, because of the plasticity of sound effects available. And sometimes I think the sound effects assume more significance than the characterization.
It's a very interesting point that you make about the opening of a story and the hook. I think it was a quote I read by Tim Crook, who of course wrote the Radio Drama Theory and Practice book, and he spoke about don't slowly start your story. Actually, find a point of action in your story and drop your listener right into the middle of that, and then, if necessary, go back and tell the backstory after that. But do you think maybe sometimes a lot of good audio dramas fall flat because they just start too slowly and they don't win the listener over in that crucial first minute or two?
I think that audio dramas can start slowly, but I do think this is where the sound becomes important, because if you have a sound or two sounds that perhaps seem unrelated, then you can actually draw listeners into the story through the sounds. I mean, I do think that this is where audio drama is different, let's say, from movies, because movies always talk about plot and characterization and drawing listeners into the story. I think that audio drama can make more use of intelligent use of sound or oral space. I mean, this is another interesting point about an audio drama. If, let us say, an actor speaks their lines away from the microphone so as to seem far away, listeners are actually drawn into the story because it sounds different from the normal exchange of day-to-day conversation. What I'm actually saying is that audio drama can kind of subvert our expectations of what might be considered normal everyday conversation.
In terms of the future, I mean, you, as you acknowledge yourself, there's a lot of people now coming into to audio drama, you know, so-called amateurs, in terms that they're not actually making money out of it. This new wave of producers that we're seeing, how will that sort of shape the future of the medium, do you think, as more and more people are now working outside of professional production houses and institutions like the BBC?
I think the thing is, this is an interesting one, because a couple of months ago I met a colleague who works as a writer for the BBC, yet also works with students within a university context. And the interesting point he made was that he appeared to see no distinction between professional audio drama producers and amateur audio drama producers. I mean, I do think that what will happen is that the more people that get involved in audio drama, the greater the opportunities for experimenting within the medium, and the greater the chance that dramas will move beyond the rather limited boundaries at present. I mean, to be honest with you, a lot of the products that I tend to get sent tend to be in the science fiction and fantasy line, when actually audio drama can go far beyond those particular genres and end up producing dramas that, shall we say, challenge those generic expectations. And what I would like to see, and what I hope will happen, is that the more amateurs that get involved in audio drama, the more willing they will be to take risks in producing the kind of dramas that really will challenge listeners' expectations of what the medium can produce. I mean, I think the thing is that if you go to the normal person in the street, they will always equate audio drama with afternoon drama or Radio 3 drama, always the BBC drama, which has always had this stereotype of being safe but deadly, so to speak. And I think the interesting thing is that amateurs have the chance to completely redefine the ways in which audio drama can actually be approached and conceived.
Do you think there will come an opportunity to properly monetize the medium in the future, and people to earn a living off it? That's not something that's really been done at the moment, is it?
Well, I mean, there is outfits like Wireless Theatre, who have just recently moved from providing plays free to charging £1.50 for each download of the dramas. But I mean, I think it's a chicken and egg situation. If the companies themselves can redefine and make radio drama or audio drama a kind of alternative listening experience, not just for fans or for drama aficionados, but for anyone who's interested in looking at alternative modes of dramatic production, then I think people will be prepared to pay for it. I mean, what I'm actually saying is, and this is one of the things that really gets me, if a producer or an audio drama maker is prepared to challenge accepted conventions of how the audio drama medium works and prepared to make listeners or reviewers like myself think about the relationships of sounds and speech, and if that producer manages to successfully challenge that relationship, then I think he or she will have a greater chance of hooking listeners into their product and therefore being able to earn a living by it. I mean, you know, 70 years ago, this is how Orson Welles made his reputation in America. Why can't producers of today do the same thing?
That leads me up nicely to just sort of sum it up. You know, where do we go from here, and how do we go about expanding our audience and reaching a really wide audience, if you like? I mean, is it just a case of continuing to create good content, or, like you say, pushing the boundaries and doing things that haven't really been done before?
Well, I mean, I think a lot of audio drama producers, not necessarily your good selves, but a lot of audio drama producers have not sufficiently explored the range of publicity strategies available through social media. I mean, sometimes they put up their dramas on Facebook or they use Twitter, but I mean, have they used other media like Pinterest? Have they used other medias like Tumblr? Have they actually gone out and tried to market their dramas through a campaign of hooking people through social media? I mean, the other interesting thing that I think could work is to what extent can audio drama producers establish a relationship with their audiences by inviting feedback, by inviting comment, by inviting listeners to pool their reactions and expectations to or from audio drama, and then putting them out in podcast, and then taking those listeners' insights and helping them, the producers, produce more innovative forms of drama. I mean, I do think that one of the problems, let's say, of the BBC is that unless you actually get to know people, there is this divide between the ways in which the producers produce their drama and the ways in which the listeners respond to that drama. You know, that they don't actually have much communication between the two. I think that there's this opening for alternative audio drama outfits to be able to foster a relationship with their potential listeners. Once that relationship has been fostered, then I think they can build up their listener base and therefore have more opportunities to be able to experiment and also to have a positive reaction to their experiments.
Lawrence, it's been wonderful to chat. Just before we get wrapped up, what have you got anything to promote at the moment, and where can the listener find you online?
Well, I mean, the thing is that I'm always interested in radio, reviewing radio dramas. And I would say to anyone who wants to send me something that I have absolutely no expectations for radio dramas other than the fact that they have to be entertaining. And entertaining means if I am sitting in front of my computer at 11 o'clock in the morning answering boring emails, can I have something to occupy the ears? I mean, if I might just give a couple of metaphors. Last week I was in Texas talking about radio drama within the teaching context. And I said that radio drama should be able to make you hear with your eyes and see with your ears. And by that, I mean that radio drama should be able to involve all the senses. I don't quite know how that can happen. It may be something spontaneous. But I'm always willing to listen to radio plays that actually try to be to try and involve listeners that way. If anybody wants to get in touch with me, my radio drama site is radiodramareviews.com. Or if they want to get in touch with me by Facebook, my Facebook site is Lawrence Raw, L-A-U-R-E-N-C-E, Raw. The same with Twitter, at Lawrence Raw. And if you want to get through to me by email, my email is l_raw@yahoo.com. The only thing I would say is that everybody gets it wrong. My first name is Laurence, as in Olivier, not Lawrence, as in Arabia.
I have that problem myself with the two T's in my name. But just going to do my Columbo impression here, Lawrence. But one more thing that I should have asked, and it's just come to me there with what you're saying. But when you're listening critically listening to an audio drama with a view to reviewing it, the conditions of your listening surely come into it. I mean, are you doing other things? And could those other things, you know, if it's a bad thing that you're doing, could that impact on your listening and maybe, you know, sway it to being a less than favourable review? Is that a fair comment, or is that overthinking it a wee bit?
I think it's rather like, I mean, when I was a teenager, I was doing English literature at A-level. And when I did English literature at university, I was always told to read this book, that book, and the other book. And it was always terribly difficult for me to concentrate on those books because there were always other diversions in my way. But I think it's like an audio drama. I mean, other things that I'm doing at the time, I specifically restrict myself to doing manual things that involve the minimum of actual brain power. And the reason why I do that is because as radio drama is an oral medium, I actually have to remember that it's going to, as I said, it's got to help me see with my ears and listen with my eyes. And I think the thing is, the manual thing is just a way of passing the time. I mean, I do have to do other things, unfortunately, to earn my crust. And because I spend so much time reviewing audio drama, this is the way I do it. But again, I go back to the point I made earlier on. I really don't see the point in offering adverse criticisms of audio drama because I think that is unfair to the producers who've probably, like yourself, spent time, money, and energy putting the dramas together. So if I were to make any criticisms of any audio drama, I would always try to make them in such a way so as the producers did not appear offended or sorry at what they had done. I mean, I do think that this is the important role of any critic or reviewer. And I think this is the problem that a lot of newspaper and online critics actually have, is that sometimes they are more concerned with the power of their own writing rather than actually trying to establish a genuine dialogue between listeners and producers. And I think that that is principally my job, to establish that kind of relationship between producers and listeners. I mean, I'm actually a listener myself. Okay, I do publish book reviews as part of my job, but I am still doing these radio drama reviews as an aficionado or as an enthusiast, not to earn any money by them. And I do think that that's the important thing to remember for any reviewer. They should love listening to radio dramas and communicate that love through their reviews.
Thanks again to Mr. Lawrence Raw for some interesting stuff there to do with the reviews of the industry. So let's get back to matters at hand. Uni sound tests feedback. You've been getting some feedback about your work at university, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I think this ties in with what we spoke about with Lawrence, because I just wanted to talk a wee bit about getting feedback, getting constructive criticism, how you sort of deal with that and how you move forward. Just a wee bit of background for the listener if they're not aware. I'm currently at university. I turn up sometimes and I'm writing a paper on sort of studio recording versus field recording, also looking at sort of remote recording as well and how that fits into the bigger picture. But as part of the dissertation paper, I put together some listening tests of dramas that I'd produced recently, both remotely and in the studio and in the field. And I've just asked people to comment on them, to mark down the areas that they preferred, and to actually leave critical feedback. And I was really pleasantly surprised at the response I got. I put the links up on Facebook and in the Facebook group, and a few folk got back to me, and it's been really good. I was quite worried that, you know, when you get these things back, and people are obviously very supportive, which is brilliant, but I was a bit worried that I would just get everything back and everyone would just say, like, that was great.
10 thumbs up.
Yeah. And, you know, as nice as that is to hear, it's not too helpful when you're looking to improve, you know, when you're looking at areas that you might be able to do better in. So it was good to look at. And this is something that I will publish further down the line. I'll get together all the comments and things like that. But, what's your opinion, Robert, when you get good constructive criticism? Things are pointed out to you. And I'll give you some examples soon of some of the comments. But, you know, when someone says to you that there was maybe something they didn't like, there was something they would have changed, you might not always agree with yourself, but what's the sort of next steps, in your opinion, when you get that sort of feedback?
It can be difficult to take it on if you're really happy with your work the way it is. But it's something I think is severely lacking in this industry, if you like, is getting real feedback that's constructive. And I think we're all guilty of just telling each other that we all love each other and without saying, do you know what, actually, that could have been better, it could have been solved in a different way or whatever. Way back at the beginning of Aftermath, episode 1, Mr. Casey Wayland gave us some feedback, didn't he, in saying that he's not keen on too much panning. And looking back, yeah, episode 1 was panned to hell. Everyone was going left and right. There were people moving backwards and forwards around the room per scene.
It was like one of the futsal tables.
Yeah, pretty much. And I remember thinking, well, all right, he doesn't like panning, but I really enjoy it. I enjoy the work putting in. I feel like I'm being constructive. But he's absolutely right. And I kind of knew he was right at the time because he's obviously very successful. So feedback, yeah. The advice I would give to anyone is to look for it and get it and analyze what it means and, you know, really take it on board. Don't just think that you're brewing at everything, because it's the only way you learn. And do you know what I mean? I think, like, people maybe don't look for feedback very often, and they should, because there's been plenty of times you and I would say, or at least I won't drag your name into this, but I've heard lots of stuff out there, and I'm thinking that could be a lot better if just for something very simple, like, I don't know, I don't really want to give examples or anything, but I think feedback is invaluable. It could be something simple like get a better mic or stand in a different room, or the writing is done in a really obtuse and expositional way. Like, you can't just say, oh, I see you've got a gun in your left hand and you're pointing it at my heart. You obviously mean to kill me. Like, that's garbage. It might seem brilliant when you're writing it down, but when it comes out, it's like, maybe it could have been better. Does that answer your question?
Well, it was a long-winded answer, but, you know, I'll let it stand. I think on a personal level, as a creator, as a sound producer, you do need feedback. And like you say, yeah, I hear shows and I hear wee things in them, even shows I really like. I hear wee things on them that, you know, if the producer of that show asked for my opinion, I would certainly say, well, you know, there was these small issues. If you corrected them, the show would be even better than it already is. And just the other week there, I had a bizarre, geeky moment where I took a lot of MP3 files of some of my favourite audio dramas and loaded them into Adobe Audition just to look at the waveforms and how they compared to each other. At that point, I'm sitting at the computer. I had my Audio-Technica headphones on. They're pretty good. That's what I edit with. Mm-hmm. They pick up everything. I heard some flaws on some of my favourite shows. You know, some very obvious flaws, production-wise. I'm not going to name them because it's not fair to the producers of these shows. They didn't ask for these things to be highlighted. Different if they actually came out and asked, then... But I reckon, they'll be aware of them anyway. It was some older episodes. Would it be a good idea to see... I think you get this in the writing world, but to get a group of people who were going to give each other honest... constructive criticism without the fear that it might be uncalled for or someone might be a bit thin-skinned and throw the toys out the pram. If you all knew that you were there to kind of encourage each other and to give criticism where it was sort of needed, would that be something that could maybe work?
Yeah, definitely. And it'd be good as well if it was done in that kind of shared forum where you give the producer or the writer the chance to respond almost immediately, because they might say, I see what you're saying. However, it was the very best we could do. Remember the other day when I mentioned on The Simpsons Stephen King's cameo, I could tell that it was peaking slightly. And out of the blue, now, was it Fred?
Yeah, it was Fred, yeah.
And he was like, yeah, well, I was there. And actually what it was that it was a really difficult room to have right for recording, and we did actually pretty well considering the circumstances. And I was like, whoa, A, mental that you were even there. B, from the sounds of things, brilliant. C, I'm really sorry that I kind of tried to stamp all over, which I didn't really. It was just like...
Just an observation.
It was more that I could pick that out, whereas I would never, ever, ever before getting into audio have noticed such a thing. But yeah, so I noticed when I was at uni doing... the radio degree, and the drama module in particular, we would all critique each other's work, and that we'd go around the groups and say, "What do you think of this?" Blah blah blah. Yeah, well, I thought this, I thought that, and then the person who made it got to say, "Yeah, okay, well, I hadn't thought of that. Thank you very much." Or, "Well, or I disagree." Or, "Yeah, well, I couldn't really do a lot else with it. I did the best I can." And because it was in that shared forum, nobody took too much offence, and just it was all done in the right vein, rather than just somebody randomly going on Facebook and saying, "Well, I just listened to this, and it is rubbish for the following reasons." That doesn't help anyone. I think as long as you come up with a solution or a potential solution,
as long as you're specific,
why don't you try this instead, or you might want to consider such and such. Then it's it's done in the right vein.
And there's also the if it was a sort of organised critique of each other's work, there'd be no point in somebody coming to us and saying, "By the way, episode one of Aftermath, I found these five or six issues," and we're like, "Whoa, we know was a long time ago. We've improved a lot since then." But
we'd be like, "What? Only six? Well, actually, we found 15 after going back." So, yeah, no, that was the other thing I was going to say, is that you go into the audio drama world and you'll see things that going back to 2007 or even further. And they probably have learned from it themselves and moved on. Well, some will, some won't perhaps. Maybe it's something that we could suggest in future as a critique forum, where maybe we could start it off by saying, "Hey guys, we've just made a new one-off drama. It's about two guys in a car and they end up crashing it. What does everybody think? Can you tell us what you think about the sound, what you think of the form that you're doing for uni, the sound tests?" I thought it was really interesting, the different categories.
Yeah, I would say as well, how do you take action on feedback? Because a lot of the comments I had were actually contradictory. One person would have a strong opinion on the way something was done. They really didn't like it. Someone else said it was really good. So there's a degree of, you have to know, what to change and what to just let it slide. You cannot please everyone. You never will. I think, never be precious about it. It's just someone's opinion and it's welcome to hear it. You don't necessarily have to take action on everything. Certainly take note of it, as long as you've got that desire to improve. if there's feedback you definitely agree with, then for sure, run with it. And sometimes it's even good. You know, I think we've all been in this position where you've been editing something and there's something that you're not quite sure on, but you let it slide, you let it into the mix down. And to hear it pointed out, you know, that this certain thing could have been done better, or I think it was maybe too low, or I think you've not executed it quite well enough. And hearing that reaffirms that you were actually right. And there's less chance of you then using that method further down the line. So sometimes it's just that second opinion sort of reaffirms something in your mind, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it's worth remembering that in the creative world at large, whether it's in music or in filmmaking, big blockbusters and stuff, even when they're writing the script, when they're getting the best actors and whatever, when they've mixed it down, they've produced it, they've still no idea how it's going to be received by the public at large. They think, well, I think it's a number one record. It's going to make a million, or it's going to do really well at the box office. It's going to be a classic. And no matter how many times you check out your own piece of work or get a few people, you just don't know if people are going to like it or not. So it's that's the thing with creativity. It's not like a maths equation. It's like, well, I think I've solved it. What do you think? You know?
I think as well it's important to, you know, for ourselves and the listener to draw the line between their own self-improvement as a creator and actually understanding who the majority of their listeners are. The majority of your listeners aren't actually audio producers. I think that'd be a fair assessment. I mean, last time I checked, Aftermath, I think it's had 55,000 downloads in total. And I'd be very surprised if the majority of those downloads came from audio producers. Certainly when we put our first episodes out, we were very happy with them at the time. We didn't have a trained ear at all. And, you know, the majority of your audience are listening to your content because they like it. So although there's probably always, I mean, there is definitely always room for improvement, doesn't matter what level you're at, that's not an excuse not to be creating stuff because you feel that it's not, you know, it's not Premier League quality, if you like. You've just got to keep moving forward. You've got to make sure that your next episode's better than the current one and the one that comes after that's better again. It's just a constant work in progress, isn't it?
I guess, yeah, the feedback really has to be about things that are inarguably a flaw, like having two voice actors that are meant to be outside and you can hear the voice of one of them bouncing off a wall. And it's like, well, that needs to be fixed. There's no kind of aestheticness about it. It's a flaw and fix it, you know. Whereas some other choices, when it comes down to opinion, then that's, you know, that could be debated forever. So, yeah, look for feedback about things that really, really stick out like a sore thumb. Like, oh, God, that scene just went on forever and I don't know what the point of it was and I just got bored and I tuned out. Then, yeah, maybe cut half of that out or something. That's the sort of feedback that I think is the most valuable.
Yeah, so I'd be interested to hear people's opinions on that as well. You know, what's your experiences with your own shows? What sort of feedback have you had? Have you sought out constructive criticism? And if so, how have you went about it? And, you know, what was the response? What actions did you take? All that sort of stuff. I'd be really interested to hear your opinions on the matter. Coincidentally, this brings us in nicely to the next piece here because we're going to phase out the old email address, which is mainly info@yapaudio.co.uk. We'll still check it at the moment, but yeah. The new email address, let's see who could be the first person to get in touch. It's podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. Did you get that, Robert?
Can I have a go at saying it?
Go on.
podcast@audiodramaproduction.com.
So yeah, get in touch at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com with your thoughts on this week's topic. And also I thought to celebrate the transition of email addresses, we could we could have a wee competition.
Fantastic. That sounds good.
It's a pity though that we're men of few resources, but we do have the ebook, How to Create Audio Drama, it's perfect if you're a beginner, or maybe you know a beginner that you could pass it on to. But have you got a copy of the question there, Robert?
I do. The question is this. What was Wallace's horse called in Aftermath?
What was Wallace's horse called in Aftermath? Aftermath is our post-apocalyptic audio drama, which ran for two series over 12 episodes and finished in January. So you could listen to the whole thing from start to finish. If you've not heard it already, you'll get links to that on the show notes at audiodramaproduction.com. And yeah, just email us, podcast@audiodramaproduction.com. Tell us what Wallace's horse is called. And one person who gets back to us will have to employ some sort of random number generator, and maybe it'll be a coin toss. We'll get two emails and we could toss a coin. But yeah, we'll pick someone and we'll give them a copy of the ebook.
Fantastic! Can I ask the question again?
Go on.
The question is this: to win a free ebook, what was Wallace's horse called in Aftermath, the post-apocalyptic audio drama?
And of course, if you're listening to the show in 2017, completely disregard all of this. This is very much a time-sensitive, around the time of release type question. So shall we set a deadline? What's the date on Sunday? I really should have wrote that down.
This Sunday coming?
Yeah.
It's the 22nd of March.
22nd of March. So
shall
if
we
you're...
say midnight?
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, there's time difference type issues and things like that. Don't report us to... Is it Ofcom that look after the competitions? Not on podcast, surely.
No, we're all right on podcast. And like, if we go on to an FM radio station and do it, then we could be in trouble. For more
that'll
reasons
than
one.
That'll never happen.
Yeah. So, yeah, I look forward to seeing the entries. And if anybody still wants a copy of Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, I think one or two people had asked about it in the past, and I've just forgotten about it because I lost interest. But you can email us at podcast@audiodramaproduction.com and ask about Sister Act 2, Back in the Habit, starring Whoopi Goldberg, and we'll see what we can sort out for you.
Well, on that note, shall we leave it there for this week?
Yes, everybody, please enjoy your lives and spare a few moments for audio drama at some point and share with us your thoughts and views.
Yep, have a great week. Eat your cereal. I don't know if I've said that before. I hope
you
I have.
You have. And
why did I say it again? What's with me and cereal? I do eat a lot of cereal, but
well, I didn't have cereal myself today because we ran out and I hadn't realised. And I actually bought some cereal on my way home tonight, which is why I was a few minutes late getting onto Skype, because I had to stop off to buy cereal.
Solid banality here. Love it.
Right. Okay. Folks, thank you very much for listening, and we'll speak to you very, very soon. Get us on Facebook. We're always on there.
Facebook.
Yeah.
Right. Cheerio, you.
Guten Nacht.